So tell me about Loving Grasslands, because it's a series and it's quite clearly a commission of some sort.
Well, I guess it came out of one of the good things that maybe came out of COVID-19, one of the few good things. But I found myself at a working, producing, working on projects, developing projects, and everything came to a screaming halt with COVID, and it was kind of no end in sight as to how long it's going to go on for. So I took a job with Hume City Council up on the northern edges of Melbourne, up near towards Tullamarine, there past Tullamarine, where it's on the edge of the Victorian Plains, and it's a kind of a unique ecosystem out there, which used to be Indigenous grasslands that were in really good condition and properly managed, as you know, for thousands of years with fire and grazing, and then, well, I guess when agriculture arrived, we introduced a whole lot of exotic species, and we brought weeds and pests and everything, and we kind of destroyed pretty much. I think it's only about 1% remains intact and diversified. So it was kind of interesting to kind of learn all this when I started working in this bush crew for Hume. And I suppose I think one thing about COVID, it's sort of we slowed down, we looked at the world differently, maybe, and we kind of maybe looked a bit more of the detail and the minutiae that we might not have taken the trouble to do in the pre-COVID. And maybe that's what happened with me. I just kind of had time maybe to reflect and explore the world of Indigenous grasslands and kind of what's happening to them and why. And so yeah, I kind of talked to the environmental coordinator at Hume about the idea of recording them on video, and he was really enthusiastic. He thought it was a terrific idea, and could see the importance of sharing the success stories in this field. And so he encouraged me to put a proposal together. So, I did wrote a 4 or 5 pager with a bit of a budget outline and a schedule. And he said they loved it, and they said, "Yeah, look, go ahead with it." Within about a month, I think, of me pitching it, they said, "Go ahead, and you can start straight away." And I thought, fantastic, So I, and I think took about 6 months probably all up by the time I found locations and found the right people and, worked out how to sort of tell it. It wasn't very clear at the beginning. It basically just came together, I suppose, once I started filming it and editing the first one, or the second, third, and fourth one kind of just fell into a similar format, 10-minute length. It seemed to kind of be what's needed to tell those stories. And so that's kind of basically how it all kind of started.
Well, it is fascinating because, for a start, it's so close to Melbourne. I mean, I ride a bike, and I am in Melbourne, and I constantly reimagine the landscape that I'm on, trying to imagine what it must have been like without all the roads and all the streets. Because when people are walking on it, they don't realize that there's actually slopes and there's inclines. But when you're riding a bike, you realize that it's following a track to something that was much more natural underneath. And grasslands, I've done interviews with people about the protection of grasslands. And it's only most recently, really, that people have realized the ecology of Australia is dependent on those grasslands. And your series is a beautiful way of introducing people to what's incredibly local to a city, Melbourne, quite close, these things.
Was amazed too, actually, that we could find these stories of such significance right on the edge of the Tullamarine Airport, and that one of the challenges was recording out there was the aircraft traffic and noises and industrial, because there's a whole lot of development and kind of estate planning and construction, or there has been for a long time, as you know, out that way. And it's kind of just I just what they I think urban sprawl is a good name for it. Just sort of goes on and on and on. But there are, I think, there's limits, and I think the state government is made commitments to the UN about preserving grasslands, because they're a unique ecosystem. I think they're listed as endangered, and we've made commitments to kind of protect them, but I don't think we've really delivered. I don't think the state government's delivered on those commitments because land
No,
prices are
I don't
so
think they
high, and
understand. I don't think they understand what it's about. And what was really fascinating in your first episode was culturally, the old Sunbury site is of importance to the people who were involved in that in the 70s. But those pictures, what a barren place it was, and
it was,
how it's changed.
That's what shocked me was what I found really interesting with that footage of that I got hired from Umbrella Entertainment, the people that distributed that Sunbury documentary. It shows how bare the ground was back in the early 70s. It must have been a few hot summers or whatever, but it was totally bare. But the weeds hadn't really moved in at that stage. It was just at that point where it was really vulnerable and it was exposed and bare and exposed to erosion and everything. And it just really highlights, how, in those since the 70s, all these weeds came in. And when Dietmar and Suzanne moved there in year 2000, it was just a complete mass of weeds. But then in 20 years since 2000, that couple have basically turned it around and kind of reforested it. And it's really interesting just to see those different phases, just with a bit of archival footage. It just gives you a bit of perspective, and you get to see how the weeds have moved in. And it's that bare ground and just not managing it properly, letting those exotic weeds build up, not using fire to advantage the indigenous species, which is what fire always does. It, you can put a fire through any grassland, you'll be able to cut out a whole lot of Chilean needle grass and serrated tussock and all these weeds that have come in from New Zealand and South America, and you'll favour the local ones that love fire, like kangaroo grass and weeping grasses. And so, it's you have to. That's why it's kind of gone to the dogs, I suppose, because it's just been, it's just kind of just not managed and more mis, act, you know, actively mismanaged is probably a better way
But
to describe
also,
it.
it's more that people don't know what they're looking at, I guess. And one of the beauties of this series is that you make us see the land in with different eyes. We see it in the eyes of the people who are now managing it.
That's thank you. That's good. That's what I wanted to do. And that was kind of it was finding those people that had that ability to tell a story and to draw you into their world and into their passion for what they've done. And I think they all did it. They were all different and they're all passionate in different ways, but that all kind of reinforced this one idea of just you've got to give more to the land, you've got to give more, and there's more you can do to kind of help nature get on with repairing itself. And you don't have to do a lot, but you have to do a little bit, and then you sort of have to get out of the way, I suppose, and let nature take over. That was another theme that kind of kept emerging. And so it's interesting, just finding those people. Obviously, they're all within 5 Ks or whatever, 10 Ks around Sunbury. And so it's amazing to have found those five people that were quite, could tell a really good story, were quite comfortable being on camera and, had some results to show. It was kind of, I felt very fortunate, very blessed that it came together as it did because, and when I first started, I thought, oh my God, I'm getting paid to make a doc series. I'm not sure there's actually, I can find a story in this, in this jungle of
No,
weeds and,
but the thing about it is that people, like, they've dedicated themselves to this because they've understood it. And now you give them a platform to actually tell people what it is that's so important about what they've been doing. I mean, it's not about them, it's about the land.
it's really interesting. It's like it takes them to create the story and for me to come along and kind of find it and tell it and package it, I suppose, and tell it in a way that people can kind of get it. And it's just an interesting collaboration, I suppose, doing
Yeah,
that. And
that's right. The other thing is, I guess from a filmmaker's point of view, as well as the person who actually comes from there, you can't unsee all those grasses anymore, can you?
that's true. like we basically like we lost the farm back in the Riverina in New South Wales back in the 80s after the 82 drought, 81, 82 drought, because their weeds just were taken over. And it's the cost of weed control, the cost of chemical control, all that. And my dad was a bit opposed to that anyway. He just didn't think it was necessary. If you had to kind of spend a lot of money spraying chemicals and then working them into the ground, which you had to do with the in the 70s when they first developed farm chemicals, they had to be cultivated in and mixed into the soil. And it was incredibly expensive and really hard on the soil, like cultivation and everything. And he just, he basically just said, no, I'm not doing it. And, but the, he lost the farm because our yields just weren't, good enough. And when you've got weeds robbing the ground of moisture and nutrients, it's hard to kind of make a profit. So, you know, it was a very challenging time. But, yeah, I did maybe burned in a few lessons into my memory and helped me to kind of tell a better story now, I suppose, a bit later on, you know, how to kind of get on top of these things and how to turn, restore a landscape to a healthy kind of condition.
It's great that this is on at the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival. So you must be pleased.
It's very exciting. It's always nice to get a premiere in your hometown. It's only happened a couple of times for me, and I guess I didn't know what I was doing a bit with web series because they tend not to be a big focus of festivals. You tends to be short films and feature films and kind of what have you. But yes, web series are becoming much more of a recognised format, I suppose. So it's great to have these online programs like Melbourne Documentary Film Festival has, where they can kind of do stuff that is dedicated to the to screening on the internet and kind of just give it a platform to kind of launch and to get it out to new audiences, I guess. So it's really great to have their support.
Well, I suppose the Hume Council must be happy because this is a very interesting way of raising awareness.
Look, it is. It's a very innovative of Hume to kind of get to roll their sleeves up in this area. But I guess a lot of the country municipalities or shires like Kooranga might probably down in the southwest around Shelford and kind of, out that way. They have been doing kind of a lot of restoration work and video work, and they probably... and that's more Broadacre, and I suppose it's more of a commercial setting there. So you could understand that communication and kind of advocacy, I suppose, of land management would be a thing that they do. But it's sort of unusual for a city or municipality in a city to kind of do this because it's generally the audience, they're small landholders and they tend not to sort of. Yeah, so it's not a commercial proposition. It's more of a love job, a passion. You know, it's a labour of love and a kind of a passionate thing that's driving what's happening there. Because a lot of these people, they're sitting on multi-million-dollar properties because they're, some of them up to several couple of hundred acres. I think David Brown's property, but that can't be subdivided. So he's got to look after that land, manage that land, and retain its. It's value, and that's why Hume sees fit to help people with matching funding grants, so that if someone, a landowner, puts in some effort to manage the property, that they'll match it and they'll give technical advice as well to make sure that they get a really good outcome. So I think they will be pleased, and I'm hoping that they are pleased, and I'm hoping that it'll prompt other councils maybe to do something similar and show a bit of leadership on this issue.
Well, good job done. Well, good on you.
Thank you. It's good fun.
Yeah, good. Well, you made a project, a film project, but you've also done social good.
Well, yeah, that is a nice feeling, actually. And it's funny how these ideas come along, but if they're good ideas, they kind of manifest and the other people kind of get them and they kind of develop a bit of a life of their own and they kind of happen. And you know what I mean? Like they're going to happen anyway at some point. They become unstoppable, I suppose, and they just seem like and everything seems to come together and people can't help you enough, and it's it's a good feeling. And getting the publicity we've been getting has been fantastic too. So it's really appreciated by myself and the crew. So yeah, thank you.
Thank you for talking to me.
All the best, Annie.
Yeah.
Have a good day. Bye bye.
Bye.